Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is Yoga of Devotion. We can say the Bhagavad Gita is a book par excellence which treats in depth the subject of devotion. If you look at the title of every chapter, it begins by the word devotion. Devotion by means of faith, devotion through spiritual discrimination, and so on. So this devotion is certainly of great importance. Don't know who, but this is a way in which the three paths are explained. They say that the three paths you may compare with the jewelry box, and the base, the bottom of that box is supposed to be karma marga. The lid of the box is jnana marga. But the real jewel is devotion. It is the path of bhakti. So it is compared to the real jewel, which is just supported by the other two, which is jnana and karma. Whatever it be, as we study Gita, we are able to appreciate the three paths. And simply put, you can say devotion is supreme love of God or intense love of God. And that is what many times we do, we compare it only with some human emotion. And that is why Mr. Judge, in Buddhi Yoga, commenting on that, he is saying, let us be devoted. And by that devotion, he means, let us offer mental devotion to God, which means mental abnegation from everything else. Mental detachment from all the other things will only equip you to have complete, full, supreme devotion or love for God. We will see as we proceed how very apt this understanding of devotion is. Now, in one sense, as St. Paul says, at the base of your nature you find faith, hope and love. And yet, in a way, we may say, devotion is innate in us. And yet, Theosophy tries to explain that at a particular point in time, that is what is called as the lighting up of manas, when man had the body of a human being, but the mind was not that of a man, it had to be activated. And when the manasaputras, you call them finally as spiritual teachers, who gave the light of mind to man so that he could think, he could choose, and he also had self-consciousness, ability to say, I am myself. And they also impressed on his consciousness spiritual ideas. And very beautifully, HPB describes that at that time, humanity was like some helpless child. And therefore, there was that great feeling of reverence and gratitude which they felt for those beings who were benevolently giving them the light of mind and knowledge. And therefore, she says, the first feeling that arose was the feeling of oneness, which they felt for those spiritual teachers, just like the first feeling of child is that of oneness towards the nurse, towards the mother. And from that feeling of oneness arose the feeling of devotion. This is very important. So in its highest form, what is devotion? It can only arise only when there is a feeling of oneness with God. When one is identified with God, who bears no competition with another, as it were, that is when that highest devotion will come. But we know how from that exalted state in which humanity was, slowly there was a degradation, and with that the idea of God itself was degraded so that we have a personal God idea. And once the personal God idea was there, the very idea of devotion also was degraded. So the first thing that happened was this God, which was personal God, was given a form, a name and attributes, the qualities. And that is how we had a different kind of devotion, which was of an inferior quality. So it is very important for us to see two kinds of devotion, sakamya bhakti and nishkamya bhakti. The sakamya bhakti is that devotion which we are seeing everywhere. People go to temples, synagogues, churches, masjid. For what? For getting something. For fulfillment of some worldly desire. They are offering worship. And through that worship, they are expressing their devotion. And that is the sakamya bhakti. Very rarely do you find an ordinary person going to temple because it helps him to connect with God. Because that's exactly the purpose of the saguna bhakti. We are not able to think of a God, as very rightly in the 12th chapter of the Gita, when Arjuna asks, which is better, the worship paid to the God in form or the one which is not in form? And Krishna has to say, so long as you are in this body, it is easier for you to worship the God in form. But even that God in form can be worshipped for his own sake and not for something. That would become a nishkamya bhakti. You can also divide bhakti into saguna bhakti and nirguna bhakti, apara bhakti and para bhakti. Again we see, saguna bhakti means idol is required, worship is offered, puja is done, rituals and ceremonies are also performed, and somehow or the other, the feeling comes, God is there in this particular idol that I am worshipping, and that whole idea that God is everywhere simply takes a back seat. This doesn't happen only for ordinary people. That happens, and that is why all these problems that we have today. Everybody thinks my God is the most important and the highest God and the others are inferior. And as very rightly Swami Vivekananda says, from that feeling what happens? It's a feeling of a dog. The dog is so loyal or devoted to his master that anyone comes on his master's property, enters the compound, he will bark and bark and drive him away. He's so loyal to the master, devoted to the master. This is the kind of bhakti which he calls gauna bhakti. That's what we do. Someone says something about Ganapati. Someone says something about my Shiva. It may not be derogatory, but we twist, turn and make it into something derogatory, and then there is a fight. We defend our God. We defend our religion, which is associated with that God. This is what Swami Vivekananda says is a gauna bhakti. This is inferior. Now, this is apara and there is para. But that apara is also saguna bhakti, in which therefore first correction that we need to make, and that is not just us. It can really be carried on to a very high level, as this very story we have repeated many times, of Namdev. Before he became Sant Namdev, we know that there was a little pride in him, and other saintly people like our Gnaneshwar and all call him Kaccha Madka, that he is not a properly baked pot. He is very offended. And imagine this Namdev having a relationship with the idol of Vitthal and talking to him. And he says, they are calling me like this. Vitthal understands and therefore says, I will tell you, you need some more learning. So he is directed to go to a certain person in a certain village. When he goes there, this also we have shared with you before, the person happens to be a saintly person called Vishobha Khechar. And purposely, he is sitting with his feet resting on a shivling. And therefore, of course, Namdev, who thinks that God is only in this and only in that, is feeling, what this man can teach me? He doesn't even revere shivling. So he says, but sir, there is God here. Oh, I didn't know. He removes the feet and puts on the ground, and there is a shivling which springs up beneath his feet. Anywhere he puts his feet, there is a shivling which springs up. Then Namdev understands, the lesson which he has to learn. He falls at his feet, goes home. For 1 month, he does not visit Vitthal temple, and Vitthal comes in his dream and says, "You didn't come to meet me." He says, "Don't make fun of me. You are everywhere. I don't need to come to your temple to see you." This is the lesson. And this lesson is very important. Great devotees, so-called, are lacking in this understanding, and that devotion becomes somehow not enough. So long as the recognition that God is everywhere, even intellectually, is not there. And this is the lesson which the saintly people try to give again and again. Take another example. Sant Eknath. Eknath's, this example is very well known, but we didn't know the context was so beautiful. So we are told that in those days, there was this tradition, this custom, and this again is making a very important point. You see, custom and tradition, rituals and ceremonies is very important for a devotee. I have to have my 7 o'clock puja. I have to do this at 5 o'clock. This must be offered to deity. If it is not there, so devotion is such a hard and fast fixed schedule and fixed ways of doing things that it takes all the charm and all the spirituality out of it. And this is what is also driven home through the story, that in those days that Eknath, Sant Eknath with his disciples had gone to Varanasi. Obviously, when you go there, you fill up your vessel with Ganga water, Ganga Jal. So they fill up a pot of Ganga Jal and then they have to come back. In those days, I don't know now if it is there or not, the tradition was that people who pick up Ganga Jal have to go to Rameshwar and offer that Ganga Jal there. So then you are having the whole pilgrimage from north to south. They are on the way and they are resting somewhere. Very far away is the river Godavari, and it's a hot summer afternoon. They are resting under the tree, and then suddenly they hear a great noise coming from a donkey, the braying of the donkey going on. So they all rush and see that the donkey is feeling very hot and he is thirsty. Now they are all looking at their whatever little belongings to see if there is water somewhere little. But they don't have even a drop of water. And Sant Eknath, without hesitation, says, "We have a pot full of Ganga Jal," and simply pours it in the mouth of the donkey. And the disciples, wide-eyed, look at him and say, "But then, what about going to Rameshwar and offering Ganga Jal? What shall we offer?" And Eknath says, "He is my Rameshwar." This is important. What a great message. So that you are not going to neglect that God which is everywhere else for the sake of that God which is in your idol, in your temple, in some place of pilgrimage. That awareness must be there all the time at the back of the mind. And Saguna Bhakti is many times looked down upon. And why? Precisely because in Saguna Bhakti, people feel that they have to offer this worship to an idol. But what is this Saguna Bhakti? It means form and qualities. The qualities aspect, we are not even paying attention much. We are paying attention to the form aspect. And if that is so, we are given definition by HPB that the theosophists are nastika only in the sense that they do not believe in idol worship. And very rightly, we have Swami Savitananji elaborating on this Saguna Bhakti. What does he say? And I think it is an eye-opening thing. That Saguna Bhakti is not just worshipping the idol. Then you have missed the point. Then you are never going to come up to the real understanding of devotion. But that Saguna Bhakti also means paying attention to the guna or qualities of whatever deity you are worshipping, so that if you say, "I am a Shiva Bhakta," And if you are only sitting near the shivling and then pouring water and milk and all that, and that is about all, but not paying attention to who Shiva was. And that the very, very important aspect of Shiva is what? If you look at and remember the story where he is burning Kamadeva and transforms him into Ananga, the formless, showing that Kamavasana is something which he has overcome and he has got a purified desire. Are you trying to be as detached or cultivate that detachment as Shiva? That is the quality of Shiva which you, by first establishing the image of Shiva in your heart, should try to cultivate. Are you bhakta of Ma Bhagavati, Ma Parvati? There are lots of things. There are lots of people who are worshippers of Shakti, Devi, Mata. And then if you say that you have not cultivated that Vatsalya Bhav, that kind of compassion and love, not only for your children, but your children around you and for men and women and all the creatures, beginning with insects and animals and plants. Do you have that Vatsalya Bhav in you? If you don't, then what kind of a devotee of Mata you are? And the same applies to even Hanuman. If you have not become a servant and a das like Hanuman, what kind of Hanuman Bhakta you are? And a very interesting thing he brings about, that when you try to imbibe and be vigilant about really duplicating that very quality which is in your, what we may call as Ishta Devata, what a miracle can be performed. This is a real incident which Swami Savitananji has quoted, and he says that this is the British time where they used to do Ramalila in India, and the Britishers officers are invited there to watch, and they are told beforehand that what is going to be enacted is part of what happens in Ramayana, where Ravana abducts Sita and takes her to Lanka. After that, Hanuman will go in search of Sita, and in that the episode is that Hanuman will jump and cross the ocean and go into Lanka, and they laugh and say, who is playing Hanuman? And there is a person. So he says, your Hanuman could cross the ocean. And it apparently is happening near Varanasi where there is Ganga. At least, tell us, will you be able to cross even Ganga? And they laugh. This one was a devotee of Hanuman. A real devotee, it appears. He's feeling very, very sad. Why do they insult this God? And why do they not understand that this God could have a far greater power than just crossing the ocean? This cannot be tolerated. So there he is, a devotee. Ramalila begins, but it is going on in his mind. He climbs up the tree, and then with a sound of hoo, 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 like Hanuman, he jumps from there and flies across to Ganga and goes on to the other shore of Ganga. The Britishers, the officials, they understand what has happened and they apologize. And Swamiji has written that this appeared in the Government Gazette, the whole episode, and they have apologized in writing for making fun of the deity and the artist. What we are trying to say is that these examples show that to what extent your Saguna Bhakti can go. It is a real, real devotion which you feel, and you are trying to imitate the qualities of that deity, at least if not all the other qualities of your Ishta Devata. But it is a stepping stone to something higher. And that is why, interestingly, we will not read the quotation, but the whole concept of Navada Bhakti, the nine steps, is not for nothing. Interestingly, these nine steps are steps of Saguna Bhakti. These are steps of Saguna Bhakti. So let us remove that wrong concept of Saguna Bhakti, meaning sitting before the idol, performing rituals and ceremonies, offering puja and flowers and things like that. No, it goes beyond that. Because nirakara nirguna is beyond us. So we have to, like a child, step by step by step, reach that highest bhakti, which is of the nirakara nirguna. And the very first step, if you want to say, is that of shravana bhakti. And we will see interestingly how, if you go through every step, you find that there is a beautiful combination of jnana bhakti and karma. The shravana bhakti is what? Is something which was done, and we, I think, never paid attention in the old India and also in the new of the present modern India. It still goes on in corners of and pockets of India where there is what is the katha. There is Ramayana and Mahabharata episodes are expounded. There is scriptures expounded. And what people are supposed to do is listen with one-pointed attention. This is called Sravana Bhakti. One-pointed attention. Perfect and intent attention. Very humorously, those who are far advanced and veteran kathakars like our Dongreji Maharaj, very humorously they tell their own audience that when the katha is going on, somebody is sitting and thinking, main taalu vaakhyu ke nathi vaakhyu? Have I closed the main door of the house or not? He's sitting here and a nice Bhagavatam is expounded and he thinks whether I have closed the door and then gone. There is no attention in the Bhagavatam. And so on. I mean, time will not permit, but very beautifully this is shown that even that becomes the very first step in that Saguna Bhakti. And then, to what extent it can be taken, as Sri B.P. Wadia says, we have to be like Arjuna, perfect and resolute listener. Imagine Arjuna being in the midst of war, arrows have begun to fly, and there is a kind of a pandemonium all around, and there Krishna is telling him Gita. And at the end he is so attentive that he has assimilated the teaching and says, Nashto moha spritay labda, I am ready to do what you ask me to do. This is Shravana Bhakti. And if that is there, very rightly he says, even if you don't understand, if you just become a intent and perfect listener, all those who listen to Gita in that manner, I say they will all go to heaven world, is what he is promising. And of course, time will not permit. The other step is the Kirtana Bhakti, with which we are familiar. But let's not look down upon it. On the one hand, it will do a wonderful job for people who are only intellectuals. It's a very good step. One, for those who are very simple people who can't be really taught jnana, a bit of karma can be there, but otherwise anybody can sing bhajan. Think about Abhanga of Tukaram. Think about bhajan of Mirabai and Narsimha Mehta. They are so deep. And there is there added the very power of speech, the rhythm, so much so that certain professor in Delhi University says that Guru Granth Sahib, it is supposed to be a collection of lots of hymns, and they are all set to what is known as the Indian classical music, different ragas. And when you really recite them, it's not really sung like bhajan, it is recited. You feel your consciousness being elevated. She calls it Shabda Kirtan. It is Shabda Kirtan. So this has its place. And then there is Smarana Bhakti. The saintly people call Sumiran. They place a lot of emphasis on Sumiran or Smaran. Interestingly, if you ask ourselves, we won't say you, we would say ourselves also, unless we were coming to theosophy and doing some reading. Otherwise, as lay people, if we were ever to ask, without having any difficulty in our lives, that today, throughout the day, how many times I remembered God? And the answer would be not even once. Someone has written a very nice write-up on it. Very beautifully it goes, and then finally the answer comes, no. You had a chance to remember me now and now and now, but you didn't remember. So then the Sumiran or Smaran is important. Fix a time, 15 minutes a day, half an hour, and we are all familiar. Either Ram Nama, Krishna, Hare Ram, or Om Namah Shivaya, it is all called as Nama Japa, Mantra Japa. But it is mechanically done. Even so, it takes your mind away from the worldly anxieties and thoughts. But when it becomes a Manas Japa, you reflect on Maryada Purushottam Ram. You reflect on the qualities. You reflect on the life as you are doing the Japa. And then what happens is that it is going to change the very quality of your mind. Concentration of mind, purification of mind can come. That's why the New Age gurus will not say anything complicated, but they are all recommending do Nama Japa, do Mantra Japa. That's the way to bring about the purification. That Japa carried on for some time can become a kind of a beautiful part of your life, inseparable part of your life, so that that which was doing occasionally, done occasionally, becomes moment to moment Japa. Many times when we are doing some mechanical work or cooking, the young people have the habit of gungunana, as they say, all the music from the movies and all that. They say that why not? It will come spontaneously after that. When you do something mechanical, in the background you are saying Rama Rama or Hare Krishna Hare Ram or something. And that will impart a different quality to the work you do. And probably that is what is conveyed by that very famous story. We forget the name of the saintly woman. But she used to make what is called as the cow dung cakes, chana thapwana. And she has prepared those cow dung cakes. The neighbor puts an allegation that some of them she has stolen from me. These are mine. Now how would she prove? So she says, well, when I make those cow dung cakes, I'm always saying, Vittala, Vittala. What cakes I have made, pick up, put it near your ear, and you will hear Vittal coming from that cow dung cake. Is it really a far-fetched idea? No. Whether it is Vittal or whether it is something else, the idea is you are going to suffuse whatever you touch and whatever work you do with these holy vibrations. So there is one, every kind of bhakti can be taken to its extreme for one who really knows how. One can go on mechanically and all these bhakti will come to nothing. One can become serious about it and it becomes a stepping stone. And so the next one is called Dasya Bhakti. Dasa, again, is a servant. And again, this is a very good bhakti which we see today. There are elderly people or even simple people. There are lots of religious organizations which have this thing of having a temple where there will be aarti and puja, and then they have also what is known as annakshetra. There is food distributed and they will say then, today is my seva day. 2 hours of seva I will offer over there. So they will go and they will have the work of bathing those statues, that is idols, or making the nice mala for the god, or helping in cooking prasad or food. This is the dasya bhav, service, or even cleaning the compound of the temple. So there is tana seva, mana seva, dana seva. The tana and the dana seva are comparatively at a lower level. We can do a lot of bodily worship and a bodily service. And also it's very easy to put some money in the donation box, which hopefully will be used for helping the poor people. But what about the mana seva? This also is a great seva, as we have so many times in some other context repeated, that today it is that seva which is most important. What do we find? As HPB says, the poor ye have always with you. Poor people are there looking for clothing and shelter and food. But there are others who are more afflicted and their number is increasing. Those who are feeling lonely, those who are depressed, and those who have everything and yet feel meaninglessness of life. Are we going to not do something for them? This is the seva which we can give by giving them companionship and sympathy. But there is a greater seva which can be done, because we are talking about dasya bhav as a devotion. And that can really be ultimately fulfilled if we can make them dependent on themselves. In one of those stories in Gujarati, we don't know the context, but the sentence is very beautiful. There is this little girl called Hilli, and she doesn't have her mother, and the person has to finally say, Hilli, tu hi teri maa se. Hilli is looking for a mother, but where will he get his mother? Because she doesn't have mother. So, exasperated, the man says, Hilli, tu hi teri maa se. You are your own mother. Where will I bring your mother? That's the thing. How long are we going to be supporting people? We have to say, you are your own support, because that support is within you. So, that is something which is there in what is written in the Advent. Humanity needs help, and urgently so. Outer help, devoid of an inner change, is like putting a nice plaster and a paint to conceal the cracks of a house in shambles. Helping each other move and grow towards this source of all light and love, to help unleash the hidden springs of the soul, to inspire and awaken man towards a new vision of sublime peaks where truth and love and peace and happiness dwell as permanent inhabitants, is the real service. To make them turn inside and make realize, I am the goal, the comforter, the witness, the resting place, the asylum and the friend. If we can do that, that's the real dasya bhav. We have accomplished the devotion as being the das. And that is the next step also in the next, which is called the sakha bhav. Sakha, friend. Emerson says, who is a friend but a single soul dwelling in two bodies? That oneness. A friend is one with whom you can be yourself. And that friend is not outside of you. That friend is within you. And that sakha bhav can come only when you remain in touch. We don't remain in touch with our physical friends also. So we are lost touch. We don't ring up. We don't write emails. And this is again another friend. We have to periodically turn within and be in touch. So periodical observance of silence, periodically meditating, periodically asking the advice. Rather than depending on the outside help, ask within. Guide me in this. Throw all your weapons of offense and defense and say, now you protect me and you guide me. This is the sakha bhav. And if we cultivate this sakha bhav, then we are better able to help others, because there is a self-dependence in us, which will radiate from us and make other people, help other people become self-dependent. The last and the highest is what is called as Atma Nivedan. Atma Nivedan is a complete surrender. People like this very much because they like to conveniently translate it to mean, leave it all to Krishna. My Krishna will do everything, so that I am not going to do. He will take care. This is not really the supreme devotion we are talking about as the Atma Nivedan. Complete surrender of what? Complete surrender of the personality. Complete surrender of the ego. Our reading also says that, you know, you should make pride and self-regard bond maidens to devotion. Bond maidens means servants to devotion. Pride and self-regard. Pride is there, God knows for what. Every little thing we are proud. And self-regard. The personality, the I, is very difficult to remove. Both of these have to go. And that surrender of pride and personality is the only thing. that will bring about complete surrender. In other words, it is self-abnegation, self-denial, self-transcendence, and also it would mean the self-sacrifice. This we can see in human relations, in the lover and the beloved. They talk about being fana. I can die for you. I care more for you than my own life, and so on. It's at its own level. But taking hold of that, so that we are able to relate to this whole idea of Atmanivedan, people, Sufi saints like Jalaluddin Rumi, is using that entire analogy to show what is this in relation to God. So he has given, which we have printed as a quotation, that a man goes to the house of the beloved, knocks at the door, and she from within says, "Who is that?" And he says, "It is me," or "It is I." And she says from inside, "There is no room for me and thee." The door doesn't open. He's very sad, very disappointed. But he reflects on that. For a year he roams about and then comes back, maybe a little wiser, knocks again, and again the question is, "Who is that?" And the answer is, "It is thee." And the door opens. What is this? There is no room for me and thee. The message is simple. The message is there, which is given by all. As the voice of the silence is saying, the self of spirit and the self of matter, the two cannot meet. The self of matter is a personality, and if that is strong, the self of spirit, the God, cannot manifest. Or you can't achieve that identification with that and not have a kind of highest experience of devotion. And what does Kabir say? Jab main tha, tab hari nahi. Ab hari hai, to main nahi. And Meera is always using the language of the lovers, and she says, "Prem ki gali badi sakri." Sakri, they say in Hindi, sakri. It's a very narrow lane. Usme na samaye duhi. In that, two people cannot stand. Only one. Only one. So, your personality has to become a cipher, a zero. Only and only then, that is a complete surrender. And when can that be a complete surrender also? When you recognize that God is law, and that is law of karma. And so, as HPB says, in the qualifications of chelaship, one of the qualifications that is given is that a real chela, he will have complete devotion to the law of karma. If you want to interpret, this is a complete devotion to God, because God and law are not different. There is such a devotion to the law of karma that he will not cause that law to deviate from its path, either by propitiatory ceremony, rituals, or any other means. Which in other words means that I am now saying that I surrender my personal will to the divine will. One, when there is lot of difficulties, suffering in my life, am I able to say, this is not only what I deserved under karma, but I in fact desired, because it is desired by the God within me. And it is desired why? So that I can pass through it, learn the lesson, come out triumphant, and become a better devotee and a better person. Are we able to say that? Then that will be the Atmanivedan, the complete surrender. And even when there is something good we are trying to do, and that's what Mr. Judge is saying in notes on the Bhagavad Gita. Normally, you have planned to build an old age home, you have planned to distribute sweets to some patients in the hospital. Suppose it doesn't materialize. And then you find fault with the law, you grumble, and he says, this is not devotion. Devotion or mental devotion to God means acceptance of whatever the all-seeing law brings to you. You may say that you had something good in mind, but how do you know that the law doesn't know better, whatever it may be? So, this very broad idea of Atmanivedan must be kept in mind, and it is a complete surrender. After trying everything, after looking at this karma, that karma, seeing in what way I can be safe, and then say, I surrender to you, is only fooling God. You see, we are not surrendering. You have done your best, but then mental devotion is what he is saying. It's not physically prostrating. Mentally give up that anxiety, that this thing for whatever is the outcome. That is what is required. And that is why we have the beautiful story of Draupadi, whose robe is being pulled. There is a what is known as Vastraharan of Draupadi by Dushasana. And she is holding a finger to her pallu. That when he is pulling, this comes out, she would feel very ashamed. So she is just holding with one finger and then praying to Krishna. Nothing happens. And then she removes the finger, and we are told that sari after sari gets added to her own sari, and Dushasana is not able to do anything. He falls down unconscious. After passing through this kind of a complete surrender, then we can expect that yes, when you surrender the personal will to the divine will be ready to serve. The divine will be ready to, what Krishna says, yoga kshemam vahamyaham, satata chintayantoma, ananya chintayantoma. The one who is constantly worshipping and constantly thinking of me, I bear the burden of their happiness, and truly he bears the burden. So it's very nice to hear story of saints where last moment the saint, God comes and helps the saintly person, like we are all aware of Narsi Mehta, who has to get married, his daughter, and he is a saintly man. He is not in a way a sansari who is earning lots of money. He is generally doing his bhajan and just gets his livelihood to eat his bread and butter. Now the opposite party is asking for a moon, gold jewelry, silver jewelry, this much money. And then with complete surrender and faith, he writes a blank check in the name of Krishna. And Krishna comes in the guise of a merchant, and all the demands are satisfied. Take it symbolically, take it as you will. But we don't know what is complete surrender. We really don't know what is complete surrender. That is a very high stage. And that is the real devotion. That is the stepping stone to the nirguna bhakti, nirakara nirguna bhakti. Because when you have effaced yourself, only then you are going to be identified with that God. And as we said in the beginning of the lecture, the highest devotion is a devotion which comes only when you are identified with the nirguna nirakara. All the other bhaktis are only stepping stones to this highest, and we are far away. But impersonality and compassion, that will do the work of really cultivating the highest kind of bhakti. We will not go on further because we have quite a few questions, and we would take as many as we can. The first question was already answered. It is saying, can we say devotion means bhakti or dedication to the highest level? How one can start this path? We saw the whole journey from the sarguna, beginning with idol worship, and then going step by step, surrendering the ego, surrendering the possession, surrendering the desire, and mental detachment, live in the world but not be of the world. When we learn that, we are walking the path of devotion. What we see around is connected to worldly level. People show bhakti towards some or the other guru or swami, and for every affair seek their guidance and strictly follow them. Will it help them on spiritual path? How far is it correct to give away one's thinking and choosing capacity in the hands of others? We'll take the other question also with that. When we read about devotion in the Gita and holding Krishna as spirit, it is very clear where to show our bhakti. But many misunderstand it as only human form of Krishna and treat him like human being and show devotion of that level. Will that help him ever? So, this is two things which is really to be seen in the world. One, devotion to people. People like Swamis, Babas, some are even spiritual teachers, genuinely. Not that all are fake. They are real spiritual teachers. And the other side is where you are having the idol of Krishna, Rama, Shiva, Shivling and so on. On the one hand, there is a complete devotion which is equated with dependence. So I am devoted to this Swami or Baba means I am dependent, and because in lieu of my devotion, he has to help me out. So this kind of devotion is there. And there is also these other where if we can, we will also ask the idol which we are worshipping to do something for us. So both the ways, how far are we helped? Is this devotion real devotion? How far can we go with this devotion? As we said, it is a stepping stone. Now let us understand. It's a very interesting, important thing. 12th chapter of the Gita, of all the chapters, which are all entitled devotion by means of spiritual discrimination, devotion by this, and devotion and all that. This is the chapter which says devotion by means of faith. We need to understand the two things, faith and devotion. Faith also is of various kinds, like devotion is also of various kinds. So what is the connection? True faith springs from true knowledge. And therefore, very nice, we will be studying in Universal Theosophy. Robert Crosby is telling us about three kinds of faith. It could be sattvic, it could be rajasic, it could be tamasic. And he precisely says this, faith on an outside person, faith on the outside thing, faith on even an outside devil who will do something wrong and create problem for another person. This faith on an outside thing, person, etc. is tamasic faith. And therefore, it has limited power. Now think about what HVB has to say. Faith placed on anything will bring results. So let's not think that these people will be very soon disillusioned that this does not work. No, they will remain under illusion for a very long time. Because faith placed on anything will bring result. I want this, I want that. I have faith in this Baba, I have faith in this Swami, I have faith in this idol. I keep going to that temple, ask things and it happens. So what has done it? As HPB says, faith is a great engine. It is a great power. And it's a covenant, it's an engagement, it's a kind of a pact which is made by the lower nature of man with a higher nature of man. And this pact will be honored so long as you are doing certain things. But sometime this faith will let you down. And then we see people overnight become nastic. I worship you, I do this, and today you don't stand by my side. This can happen. So yes, the faith will, and that faith, true faith brings true devotion. That means false faith brings false devotion. It is false because it is not going to be all the time there. And as Professor C.S. Lewis says, if you want to test your faith, if you want to test your devotion, you test it by responding correctly to the situations which are very trying, difficult, and which are going to be challenging and bring you sorrow. It's very easy to say when you are shown a very sturdy rope, so long as they are going to tie a box and then put it, I mean, hang it by the precipice of a very tall mountain, is it sturdy enough? And you say, yes, yes, it is sturdy. Now they will say, tie it around your waist and you will be hanged by the precipice. Is it sturdy? And you will wonder. He says, this is our faith. This is our devotion. When the difficult times comes, pani ma besi jaiye, as they say. This devotion is therefore useful only up to a point. But as it is said in only one line, though he kill me, still I believe in him. Are we ready to say that? Because that him is the law of karma for me. And therefore, if that law of karma brings me good or bad, I stand by that. I am ready to go through it. And that is the real faith, and therefore that is the real devotion. So, it's not all in the air. It's not a sentimentality. It is not a emotional kind of attachment. And this is where you see a beautiful combination of what is called as the Jnana Marga and Bhakti Marga. The real Bhakti Marga can't be followed unless there is a proper Jnana of who God is and what law of karma is all about. You see? As said in the Gita, all three paths are useful and are needed to reach the ultimate goal. But dogmatic practices become so strong and firm in simple people's lives that knowledge becomes unreachable and they get shattered and lost. When taught real knowledge, how to explain? Is it needed? This is a very important question. It is answer to this question which is given by Mr. Judge in his article, Iconoclasm Towards Illusion. It's a very, very practical and an eye-opening article. Only a person of that level can, with complete frankness and yet, with complete, you can say, authority, put forward the truth. He is writing in the Western context and pointing out, just like in the East, we say, my Krishna, my Shiva, my Rama, he will take care of everything. So in the West, unfortunately, some things are indoctrination to understand that you believe in the blood of Christ and your sins will be washed away. Think about Jesus and he will help you out. And so make a confession and this will happen. Life is very beautiful. It is going very smoothly by doing that. And then he says, humanity after the lighting up of Manas, it is 18 million years. Humanity has to grow up now. So, let humanity know what is the truth. Truth about Savior, truth about avatars, truth about what God is, and truth about what law is, and what is the purpose and meaning of life. You will have to tell them, and as he says, speak the truth, but don't force it. The student has memorized this. Speak the truth, but don't force it. It will bring tears to the eyes of that person, but it must be told. So, this is a very important question. Yes, that point comes in life of every devoted person who is having a Gauna Bhakti. Very devoted, but it is not still the kind of bhakti which the person should engage in, which must be combined with knowledge, which must be combined with detachment. If that is not there, it is our duty to talk about what is true devotion. And as he says, for a moment he will be shattered. As the incident we have many times shared, that someone coming to Theosophy was with full devotion walking the path of liberation, moksha, 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 as so many people do. And then coming to Theosophy, he heard about the real path is renunciation. You have to renounce nirvana, not just enter nirvana. Come back and help humanity. And he cried. But he was courageous enough to give up that idea of moksha and follow the path of renunciation. The last question is about combining the three paths, which I think was sufficiently done, that you cannot walk one path without the other. And They represent head, heart, and hands. Thank you.